I'm psyched to do this show. Welcome to the RacerX Canada podcast show, brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. My name's Steve Mathis, and I'm the host of this damn thing. Thanks to everybody for not harassing me during the off week about where the podcast is. Everybody but Brad Jenkins, that is. Brad, if you're out there, I want everybody to know. Brad emailed me and asked me where the podcast was last week and wondered if I was on vacation. Maybe I was, Brad. So this podcast is dedicated to Brad Jenkins, who won't let me slack for even 1 minute. And I almost forgot. Everybody go buy Shift gear now. This is the choice of Kyle Beaton, so why isn't it the choice of you? This week's guest is another guy that's done it all in the industry, Jimmy Button. From one of the best all-time amateur careers to a national and supercross winner, to his rise now as one of the big shot agents in the industry, Jimmy has been there and seen it. He suffered a terrible accident when he was at his peak, and the courage and determination to fight back from that is probably his biggest accomplishment to date, to be honest. He's even spent a little time over in Europe racing the GPs, which not a lot of people know, and we touched on in this interview. He works endlessly with Road to Recovery as well, and he's a big inspiration to a lot of riders and people out there that have suffered spinal cord injuries. Jimmy's new job, well, I guess not that new, but Jimmy's job as an agent puts him right into the backroom dealings that go on between the riders and the teams. And in this interview, I admire what he says is his attitude when he's going to a team and asking for a rider, what a rider's worth. It's refreshing to hear an agent come clean, I guess, so to speak. Jimmy represents one of the sport's biggest up-and-comers, Josh Hill, and he goes into detail here about why he thought Hill was going to do so well this year. It makes me want to get some stock tips from JB as well, because if he can predict Hill's dominance, then who's to say he can't find me, the next Google? So here you go, another exciting podcast from me with a motocross legend and all-around good guy, Jimmy Button. These are all brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. Check them out on the web at shiftracing.ca. And this show and all the podcasts are available for your downloadable pleasure on iTunes. Hey, you guys out there, thanks for listening.
Hey, this is Davey Coombs from RacerX, and when I've got some free time, and God knows that's often, I like to relax to the soothing sounds of Steve Mathis and his podcast.
Jimmy Button, thanks for doing the RacerX Canada podcast show. I know I've been wanting to get you on for a while, and I think this is a perfect time.
Thank you, sir.
This is a perfect time because isn't Josh Hill's contract up?
No, it's not. Mm. He's got one more year. He's got one more year at Yamaha. He had a two-year deal with a third-year option. When he got top three in the championship, it extended it for another year. So he has one more year at Yamaha.
Oh, okay. Some fact-checking staff that I have.
It's too bad.
I mean, obviously, you're his agent. You're the guy that he talks to the most, probably, on a day-to-day basis. Now, come on, be honest. There's no way you thought he would do this good.
Incorrect.
For real?
Swear to God. On everything that I know, mm-hmm. I actually am surprised he didn't do better.
Really?
Swear to God.
Just from what? Seeing him at the track?
At the beginning of, beginning of year, end of last year, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. you know, after Glen Helen and everything, when he got on the big bike on a supercross track, and I went out there and watched him ride, I was like, dude, this for sure, this kid, for sure, I thought for sure he was a guy that could, I didn't care if everyone was racing, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, and no one got hurt, I thought for sure this is a kid that can be on the podium every single week. Okay, consistency and stuff like that's hard to do, especially your rookie year, but yeah. For sure, on everything that I know and I believe in, I believed 100% that he could be top three guy every single weekend.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah, and that's not just agent speak talking.
No, that's absolutely what I saw with him riding on a track. And I remember calling him and saying, dude, you are a bad dude on a big bike.
And what's the deal? Is it just a weight thing? I mean, obviously, it's not just a weight thing. You know, it's not just a matter of the 250F being that underpowered, because he's not that heavy, let's be honest. He's not talking like it's me out there.
True.
Does he just ride it better? I mean, what's the difference?
I think the biggest thing, to be completely honest with you, I think it's just his confidence on the bike. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, when he first got on the little bike, you know, right after Loretta's, mm-hmm. you know, in 06, you know, he had some really quick results and success. You know, he got that top three at Binghamton and did really good there. And You know, it was one of those things. He was just coming off an amateur bike, so he wasn't on the best bike in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets on a factory bike, factory suspension, and it's so much better than what he's riding. You know, you have all that extra confidence in the bike, and so he was able to go out there and really perform. And then I just don't think that he had that level of confidence in the little bike, you know, last year during the Outdoor Nationals. And, you know, when he went out and he bought that bike at the dealership and started riding it, and Yamaha gave him the opportunity. I mean, me and you were in the, in the announcer's tower at Wortham there, or whatever you want to call Texas, you know, and instantly, you know, he was like, okay, this is a kid that we're used to seeing every time he rides. You know, now he's doing it at a race and what he should be doing. I think he just instantly had that confidence in the bike that he could go out there and get the job done.
Interesting. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, hell, man. As good as all these guys are anymore, it's just a head game. It's who believes in themselves.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, is Jason that much better than Dungy or whatever it was? It was just a confidence thing and a mental thing.
No, you're probably right, for sure. I never would have saw him doing this well, but then again, yeah, I wasn't seeing him putting the long hours in. I mean, you always hear in the beginning of the year, oh, so-and-so is this
so-and-so
fast.
So-and-so's flying, they're doing this, they're doing that, and then they all end up being exactly what everyone thought they were going to be.
Yeah, and I heard that about Hill, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? Tell me another one, you know?
Exactly.
But good for him, and I mean, good for Yamaha for getting him for another year on the option, so they're getting him cheap, and so at least one more year anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
What clients do you work with? I mean, obviously you're an agent for Wasserman Media Group, and which is this ginormous agency. Which guys do you personally work with?
My personal guys on a racing level, of course, is Josh Bowers, Matt Lemoyne, Andrew McFarlane. You know, and those are like my main race guys, pro guys. Yep. And then I have a couple amateur kids, one being Michael Hall, which everyone will see at Millville, will be his first race. And then the others everybody will see, you know, in a couple years, and that's Max Anstey, the kid from England.
Interesting.
Is really, really good. And then next year, you know, kind of compliments of our European guy, Jamie Dobb. You know, he signed Tommy Searle a couple of years back, you know, and Tommy's going to be coming over here right after Motocross Nations this year, and I'll be handling all this stuff, you know, when he's over here next year.
Right.
So thanks to Jamie, you know, I'll be taking care of Tommy when he's over here.
Is he on KTM for next year? For the
He's not going to ride Supercross in 2009. He's just going to ride outdoors. And then 2010 he'll ride indoors and outdoors. And then, you know, for freestyle, I mean, I pretty much have the ballers of freestyle. I mean, I have Nate Adams, Adam Jones, Mike Mason, and Blake Williams. So I got my bases covered there, that's for sure.
I didn't even realize you had so many guys. You must be blowing your phone up pretty much all day long between all those guys.
Yeah, my BlackBerry is pretty much cracked out all the time.
Wasserman also represents Chad Reed, among other guys.
We got Chad, Davey, Brock Tickle, Ryan Seitz, Travis Pastrana, Terry Hart, Ryan Sheckler.
I'm interested in knowing how you get your guys and how Steve Asafin has his guy and down the line. How does that all shake out? How do you determine that?
It doesn't really get determined. I mean, sometimes there's guys that I go after directly. Sometimes there's guys that we go after as a company as a whole. You know, I mean, I signed Josh, for example. I signed him when he was 13 years old. You know, and I saw a kid at Lake Whitney that, you know, was doing okay, but no one really knew a whole lot about him. And I just saw this, you know, kind of diamond underneath the surface. You know, and I liked how he rode the bike, and he was just the coolest kid and had a lot of respect for what he was doing at that age and everything, and so I signed him as mine. But, I mean, you know, the thing about our company, we all kind of work on stuff, you know. I mean, there's, you know, especially with Steve and stuff like that, I mean, he has some avenues, you know, outside the industry, in the industry, that I don't have. You know, so we just kind of feed off each other's, you know, our weaknesses and strengths. You know, if I have a really good relationship with a company, you know, let's say Yamaha, for example, you know, I'm the one, you know, doing a lot of stuff right there, you know. But if there's another company that maybe my relationship's not so good, maybe Steve will take over on that for Josh or something, or any of the other clients, whoever it may be. So that, you know, we try to, you know, extract the best situation out of every deal that we can.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I don't think a lot of other agencies have that. You know, I mean, I really don't think they have the depth that we do. I mean, and we're not a mom and pop little deal. I mean, we're a huge business, and I mean, we have assistants and we have people that, you know, simply do invoices, and we got people, other people that simply go through magazines and go through television and record every single time any of our athletes are anywhere, whether it be on TV or in a newspaper or in a magazine, whatever, you know, whatever magazine it may be, a big magazine, little magazine, or in or outside the industry. So
yeah, it's definitely one of the big guys. I mean, you guys do more than just action sports guys too, I believe. Isn't there a wing of
yeah.
it that does more than that?
Yeah, I mean, to get into it in depth, I mean, we're the largest naming rights company in the world. You know, we have the largest roster of professional basketball players, professional baseball players. We don't represent any football players because we own a football team. You know, MLS soccer, world rugby. We have a division for NASCAR. I mean, we just opened up an office in China. You know, we have offices all over the world, whether it be Australia or England or, you know, Italy, Spain, whatever it may be. So we're all over the joint.
Now, do you have an office?
I do.
Do you? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're like
yeah.
going into work.
Yeah, I go to the office every day. When I was emailing you today, I was in the office.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I
yeah.
didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, our office, the office that I work out of, I think we have, I don't know, I think maybe 15 or 16 offices worldwide now.
Mm-hmm.
And the office that I work out of is in Carlsbad, California. And we have one up in L.A. and Beverly Hills. We got, you know, New York, Charlotte, place in Maryland for soccer, and, you know, all
wow.
over the place. So.
Yeah, I knew it was big. I didn't honestly think it was that big.
Yeah, we got a lot of employees now.
Yeah, no doubt. What, getting back to one of your riders, were you happy with Tyler Bowers' Supercross debut?
For sure. I mean, you know, he's a big kid. I mean,
he's huge.
He needs to be on a big bike.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if AMA would have given him a Supercross license, he would have been on a big bike this year, and he still would have been on the Yamaha, but he just would have been on a different team. So, but yeah, I was happy with him. I mean, you know, he was a you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh place guy every single weekend. I mean, he had a couple of mistakes here and there, but, you know, as happens being a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look at Josh last year, his first race at Anaheim. I mean, I think he got like 19th or 20th in his first mm-hmm. race. But, you know, I mean, it's not easy being a freshman out there.
Well, and then, you know, you have a guy like Kennard who has this unbelievable season, and then everybody
right.
looks at Bowers and goes, what's wrong? But there's nothing wrong with it, you know? He's
no,
doing
there's
well.
There's nothing wrong with your first year. You know, I think Tyler ended up sixth in the championship, you know?
Yeah, how'd you do your first year?
My first year, I think I ended up seventh place.
Now, there you go.
You know, so, I mean, I ended up having a good career, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he had a great rookie season, and, you know, he consistently was there, never got a great start. You know, he was always kind of having to
imagine that
work himself up from behind, but mm-hmm. that's going to happen when you weigh nearly 200 pounds and you're on a light spike.
What is his deal up this year, end of this year?
Yeah.
So you might be looking for, he's got his points now, so he might be looking for a 450 ride of some sort.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're trying to put a 450 deal together mm-hmm. for him as we speak. So
yeah.
hopefully we're able to do that, get him on a good bike and a good team, and you know, let him go out on the big class and let him do what he's capable of. I think he's going to be another situation like Josh, where he's able to really come out of his shell and turn himself into, you know, a really spectacular rider.
Yeah, he definitely looks like he's got the skills. He just looks just ginormous for that thing.
Yeah,
but
he's a big boy.
Yeah,
man,
so,
child.
you've done a lot of things in the industry, and you've been that. I don't care what you say. You've been that rock star rider. Now you're the guy behind the scenes kind of telling these guys, hey, this is, do this, don't do this. I mean, is it hard to do it? Do you look back and just can't believe what you're doing now? Or
Is there a downside to being kind of the guy who maybe squishes some fun sometimes?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
no.
I think that, you know, when I go and I do what I do now, I mean, I was a rider, you know what I mean? And I had to work really hard for, and I'm not saying the guys say don't work hard for them. I'm just saying, you know, when I was coming up, I mean, as an amateur, you know, I got everything that I wanted, you know what I mean? Because I won everything, and I was winning so many things. But then when I went pro, you know, I just didn't have the same support. And so during my pro career, I really had to fight really hard for the good rides or even the decent rides, and, you know, and then finally making it to the big factory ride and then winning races and stuff like that. So I really had to work hard at it. So I really, you know, I mean, I guess I have a lot of respect for everyone that's doing everything in the sport. You know what I mean? I don't look down upon anybody, whether, you know what I mean, whether you're a mechanic or a team manager. I certainly never felt that I was any more special than any of those guys. So I think when I do what I do now, you know what I mean, I do it and I act and do things, you know, that I think that are respectful. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go in there and say, oh, I know what the market is. I know what the value is of a rider. And if a rider's worth $400,000, I'm not going to go ask for $650,000. You know what I mean? I mean, if his value is $400,000, you might ask for a little bit more, you know, because you're going to get weaseled down a little bit. But for the most part, you know where everybody fits in. And to go and ask for so much, you're actually going to end up hurting the rider and yourself more than anything. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going to hurt a guy because then the teams or factories or sponsors are going to think, oh, is this what this kid really believes he's worth? Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to be realistic. I mean, you have to push the envelope, and I think that we do, and I think we get the most out of everything for our guys. I think I got a pretty good track record of getting top shelf, high line deals that my guys are really happy with. But at the same time, you got to be smart about the way you do it, because you want to be able to go back to those companies year in and year out for those same athletes and put together really good deals. So, you know, blowing something out of the water one time isn't going to do the athlete any good or anybody else for that matter. So,
yeah,
you know, just doing good deals and deals that, you know, everyone can live with, I think, is great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to get top line, and I mean, and even at that, these guys still don't make as much money as they should. I mean, they're out there risking their necks literally every single time they ride. So,
and you would know this. You would know.
This. I would know this about risking the neck.
Do you find yourself just shaking your head sometimes? Because I'm sure part of your job is babysitter. Let's face it.
Professional.
Yeah. Do you just sometimes just shake your head and be like, "What are these guys doing?" Or do you realize that, hey, at one time I was a kid also wrecking rental cars or whatever, you know what I mean?
I wrecked a few.
Yeah, you know what I mean? How's that transition for you? Do you just shake your head and move on, or do you try to tell these guys?
Well, it's kind of funny because the older I get and the more that I do all this stuff, I think back to how damn smart my parents are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I sometimes, you know, I sometimes hear myself saying the same things my parents said. And when my parents were saying them, I'm like, oh, you guys are completely idiots. Yeah. I know exactly what I'm doing. I that's not the reason I'm doing it. And then I see the things that I say now and stuff like that. I'm like, man, the parents are pretty smart when they're telling you not to do some certain things. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm really honest with all my guys about all the good things and the bad and stupid, just complete belligerent things that I did when I was racing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say, oh, well, you shouldn't do this. I never did that. That's bad, bad, bad. I mean, I'm honest. I mean, I did really dumb stuff when I rode.
Yep.
You know what I mean? On and off the track. So I try to say, hey, you know, here's a situation when I did something really stupid, and here's the position that it put me in, and here's what it cost me. Let's try to not do it. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I mean, I think people that are like that are trying to be holier than thou, and I don't take to that too well. I mean, none of us are perfect. The only one that's perfect is the man above. And you know, I mean, I make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And if I can help my guys to make, you know, a tenth of the mistakes that I made, I think I'm probably doing a pretty decent job of you know, kind of guiding them a little bit. So.
more than anything, you should probably give your mom and dad some props again, huh?
My parents are great, and like I said, the older I get, the smarter they are.
Yeah, that's funny. Getting back to one of your previous answers and how the guys don't make as much as they should, just, you know, without getting into great, great detail, because I don't want to keep you too long, what does our sport need to do better to make everybody more money? And I mean everybody, the Joe Olofs and everybody.
Better TV, live TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just, and people to not be so damn bitter about how much these guys make now.
Yeah, you know, that's a big part of it.
It blows me away how, I mean, some people, you know, pardon my language, get so pissed at how much these guys make. It's like, dude, so what? So someone makes $3 million, or
yeah.
Chad or Ricky or James or whoever making $5 million or whatever it is. Like, dude, are you kidding me? Look what these guys do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of sports in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, a guy, you know, hitting a baseball. You know, I went to a baseball game, for example. I went to a baseball game, went down, watched the Padres play on Saturday night down in San Diego. You know, and I mean, here's something funny. So I'm walking back. I'm getting food and drinks for everyone that's sitting with us. And pop fly happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's coming right at me. I'm not getting rid of my food. So I throw a hip into the ball. The ball just drills me right in the hip. I mean, dude, it didn't even hurt me that bad.
Yeah.
It's like, and those guys are out there making 12, 15, 19, yeah. 20 plus million dollars a year. I mean, I understand it's America's pastime and everything, but what our guys are doing is a hell of a lot more entertaining, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And we only stayed till the seventh inning, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's definitely more dangerous, more entertaining. These guys should be making more money. So, you know, no one's got a problem with a baseball player making $20 million. I mean, why you got a problem with a motocross guy making $5 million?
Yeah.
I don't know.
When I was at Yamaha, one of the higher ups there used to get so mad because Villeman was making a lot of money. And I said to them one day, did he have a gun and a mask when he went in for his contract? I'm not sure. You gave it to him. Any one of us would sign for that. He's trying hard, you know. I mean,
yep.
it frustrates me too. And then, you know, you have the internet part of it as well. And part of the problem is the guys make it look so damn easy, you know.
Well, they should.
They look.
Johnson makes the NASCAR look pretty damn easy. You go
yeah.
around the track too.
I know. I just, some of these dudes need to get out on a supercross track and realize it. I mean, you know,
yeah.
just how hard it is and how much work.
Well,
they put
you know. It's funny because I have a friend of mine that, really close friend of mine that rides motocross and everything else, you know, and I took him down on the field this year for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's ridden forever. And afterwards, he's all, man, he's all, wow. He's all, it's so much different from even five rows up. He's all, when you're actually on the dirt standing in front of the jumps, he's all, that's pretty crazy. You know, and this is a person that's ridden since he was 7 years old.
Right.
So he's seen tracks and everything else, but standing on a supercross track, you really get a pretty good value of what's going on out there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
You're right about that. Now, let's get back to your career here. You won 4 125 supercrosses, 250
national. Negative. The AMA website is wrong.
Why?
I won 5.
Did you? Oh, man.
I can name them for you.
Okay, name them.
I won my first one in 92 at Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
My first Supercross. The very next weekend, I won Indianapolis. 93, you might as well just write that one off completely because that was a complete write-off year. And then the following year, I won Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
I won Charlotte again, and then I won the last round of the series in Dallas.
I believe they have you only for one Charlotte, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, five supercrosses.
I got the trophies in the garage to prove it.
Okay. Well, that's probably pretty good proof. So 5 125 supercross wins, a 250 national win, lots of top 10 finishes in the points and in the races, and full factory guy. Blah blah blah. And considering how it ended, I mean, are you happy with your career, or do you think you were just kind of on that peak of really doing something when you got hurt?
I'm pretty sure I had 3 really, really, really good ones in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, you know, everyone wants a championship. Everybody wants this and that. And I wish I could say that I'm going to be able to die with a number one plate, you know, from Supercross or outdoors or whatever it is with me, and that's not the case. But, you know, that doesn't give me the one thing that, that probably gets me more than anything, and I'm pretty sure the year that, that I got hurt I would have been on the team, I wanted to ride the Nations.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that's just like, it's the biggest honor that there is. You know what I mean? Like, I was so pumped for those guys, like seeing, you know, seeing Timmy and those guys this year, you know, at Bud's, you know, on our home soil, just kicking the hell out of everybody. Dude, that was awesome. And, you know, the ride that Ryan had was just, you know, epic. And Ricky's Ricky. I mean, just is what it is. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, to me, that was the one thing that I really felt like I missed out on because of my injury. But other than that, I mean, I have my career now because of what I did racing, and you know, I've seen a lot of pretty cool places in this world, and got to do some pretty cool stuff, and meet some interesting people, and make some decent money, and have some fun because of racing. So that part of it, I'm not bummed out on, but I would have really liked to ride the Nations one time.
Red Dog told me that also in '99. He told me the one thing that he always wanted to do was ride for the country. So he's got to do it twice now. I'm sure he's pretty pumped about that deal. You know what's weird is that I don't think a lot of people remember that you went to Europe for a year. You could have ended up like a Bobby Moore or Healy and never come back. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
But you went to Europe for a year. What was the deal? I remember you talking to me about it before. What was the deal with Suzuki? They told you they had a deal and something happened? What can you tell us about it?
We pretty much had a deal, but then Greg won the world championship. Our team won the 94 250 World Championship, and when that happened, he had already worked out a deal with Suzuki and Suzuki Japan. If he had done that, he was going to come to America. He won a title. I mean, he's world champion, multi-time world champion at that point. I mean, you know, because he'd won a 125 championship and two 250 World Championships, and so he was making his way over. So I got no hard feelings against Greg or anything like that. It's just one of those deals that, I lost the 125 Supercross title that year to Yogi by a couple points, and, you know, had I won the championship, I probably would have, you know, they probably would have found a way to keep me on the team, but.
Yeah, and you wore JT gear.
I didn't.
For one of the last
I
guys.
I did wear JT
gear. One of the last guys to wear JT.
Yeah.
But so, like, was there nowhere else for you to, you were an up-and-coming guy. Was there nowhere for you to go? Why Europe?
It happened so late. I mean, it's not like now where everyone has managers and, you know, we're working on deals halfway through the Supercross series. I mean, it's not like that. I mean, you know, the whole thing went down 2 days before the next last Outdoor National. You know, I found out before, Binghamton. You know, it's just, well, there's, you know, after going so long with thinking that my deal was good with Suzuki, and then, you know, for that to happen, it was a bummer or whatever. And at the time, I was pretty mad at Suzuki about the whole situation. But, you know, looking back at it, I mean, it was what it was. And, you know, I tried to put a deal together with Honda. And I almost, Dave Arnold almost had me squeezed onto the factory Honda team at the time. But, you know, they already had like a four-man team, which made it pretty tough. And then, Phil Alderton over at Honda, Troy almost got me on there, and we couldn't come to terms on anything. So I went to Europe to go do a couple Supercrosses. I went to go do Barcelona and do Bercy, and I almost won Barcelona. Got passed by Jeremy and Henry with a couple laps to go, and then the same thing. I almost won the first night of Bercy. Me and Jeremy had a pretty epic battle, which was cool. He ended up winning, as he always did. And that night, the Honda team from Italy came up to me and offered me a deal for to ride the 125 World Championships. I really wasn't into it, but I certainly wasn't going to say no. And
was it good money?
Yeah, it was great money.
Was it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably great money by today's standards too. So I went home and talked about it and considered it, and he hauled around about it forever, and finally, like in December, middle of December, I finally said, you know, I finally had like used my last breath on trying to get a deal here, and I finally said, all right, well, let's do this thing. And so I signed a deal, and off to Europe I went, you know, 30 days later.
Wow, that's yeah, that's crazy. And you did okay. I think you did you win a moto? Did you?
I got so many top threes and yeah. top fours and top fives. I mean, I ended up fourth in the championship and had a bunch of motos in the bag. I had Checo in the bag both motos. I would have went 1-1. I lost an engine both times. So I was like 15 seconds in the lead. One of them happened with like half a lap to go.
Jeez.
So I had a couple of them that were stolen from me, but unfortunately I never won a GP.
Looking back, it was fun.
Oh, dude, it was a blast.
Yeah.
It was a blast. I, learned a lot, grew up a lot, that's for sure, because it's so much more difficult over there than it is here. And had fun, but I certainly wasn't into staying in Europe a whole lot longer. And so I came home and I was able to I had a little bit more time and I'd made some money over there. So I figured, okay, might as well spend it all. Let's come home and go racing. So that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah, 1996 PJ1 team, you came back.
Yep.
I was on that team. I don't know if you remember
yes.
that, but I
yes, you were.
I came on after Cog got fired, and
yeah.
I worked for Keeney, and then Keeney fired me, and Kalos. I worked for Kalos. He was weird, though, huh?
Yeah, Sean's a different, character. I've known him forever.
I bet. He was a nice guy. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But,
no, he's awesome.
He was 30 seconds before practice, he'd get on his bike, and he'd be gone by the time I got back to the truck, and he was a weird dude, but that was a pretty good season, I mean, for you, considering, look at what you came back to on a bike, just a pro circuit Yamaha, and
yeah.
I mean, you had some decent finishes, for sure.
Yeah, no, I had some good finishes, and almost got on the podium a couple times, actually,
mm-hmm.
Coming back, and I, like, literally, dude, I was on a bike you could go buy anywhere,
mm-hmm.
literally, and actually, if you were paying for stuff, you might actually had better stuff than I did.
Well, I know me and Padgio were actually paying to be on the team, it seemed like it sometimes. Things were falling apart near about the middle of the Nationals.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. But it was okay, and I ended up, really, I think about halfway through the year, Larry came and talked to me about riding for Chaparral.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when Chaparral had, 45 riders on the team.
And different bikes, and 8 different bikes.
Exactly. And for 97, they were going to be, they were going to strictly Yamahas. Everyone was going to be on a Yamaha. And, for the big class, for a 250 class, they ended up hiring myself and Phil Lawrence. And that was cool because me and Phil had been, we'd been friends since we were, 8, 9 years old. So it's kind of cool to be on a team with one of your childhood friends. So
yeah, you were 16 and 18, right, on the Chaparral?
Twelve, and he was 12 and I was 18.
Okay, well, my fact checker again. Yeah. I remember you guys looked the same. Axel Gear, Yamaha. What I mean? Like
yeah,
both tall guys.
Gear, dude, we were literally identical.
Yeah.
Literally identical with just a tweak of the second number.
I should probably confess here, by the way. In 1996 at the PJ1 team, I took a set of your gear out of your locker that I still have at home. Can I have it, or do you want it back?
That's awesome.
I
dude, how much I had so much of that gear, it was ridiculous.
I'm like, he's not going to need this, and I mean, it's cool looking gear. I have it in my closet. So
hey, for sure though, I got to say that was some of the best. Like the way everything was put together, our stuff looked pretty good.
It did. It really did. That was a cool color scheme for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But I got to tell you, that jersey, dude. The jersey weighs about
500 pounds.
Yeah, and it doesn't breathe at all, and it's got the silk screen on it. I don't know how you made it through the Nationals.
The entire thing was just filled with ink.
I know. Not a real good breathing jersey, but...
I used to Swiss cheese the things up for the outdoors pretty good.
Yeah. Well, if you ever want that gear back, like if times are tough, let me know.
I actually have a couple sets in my mom and dad's house, so
okay,
we're good.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I remember you told me your grip fell off one time in the middle of a race. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was...
That was actually a pretty gnarly story.
It was. That was 93 Houston Supercross in the main event. I was in third behind Gaddis, and who else was up front? Jeremy, maybe, because it was an East... It was back when there was actual East-West races during the Supercross season.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was like a little rhythm section straight into a triple, and I came off the rhythm section. When I hit the triple, my
my grip just came off the bike and just carted myself.
I don't mean to laugh.
Yeah, it was such the gnarliest crash, and it actually broke when the bike flipped and did everything it did. It actually ripped my gas tank off the bike.
Jeez.
And didn't even know it until like 4 years later. It actually broke my neck.
Really?
My neck was sore. I mean, it was back before, you know, the Asterix Mobile Medical Unit, and my neck was sore, and I'm like, gosh, it's kind of sore. I mean, it hit the ground pretty hard. It was sore for, I don't know, 4 or 5 days or whatever, and I ended up having an x-ray for another crash, you know, motocross deal there.
Yeah.
You know, later on, and they're like, hey, when did you break your neck? Like, well, the only time I can remember my neck really hurting was this occasion. Like, you had a fracture in your, you know, it was.
I think of a guy in the middle of the air looking at his left hand with the grip going, uh-oh.
No, my grip was in my hand. Even when I got off the ground, I still had my grip in my hand.
Again, I don't mean to laugh, but you're the only guy I've ever heard to have that happen to.
Yeah, we can look back at it now and laugh, that's for sure. We won't find it time.
We won't mention your mechanic's name, but starts with a Dean. Starts with a D, ends with a G. I doubt he listens, so it's okay. All right. Well,
good dude, though.
Before I let you go, just wondering, just Chad Reed, where is he going to sign? Just thought I'd throw it out there, all casual.
That is pretty funny. I have not heard that question at all in the last 5 weeks.
I bet. Maybe by the time this hits, it might be decided. But
doubtful.
Doubtful. Yeah.
Doubtful. You know what? But the thing is, you know, the whole thing with Chad. I mean, he's gonna end up where he wants to be. You know, I mean, he's got the opportunities to do what he wants to do. I think. You know, I don't. Steve handles Chad's stuff directly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know everything that's going on, but you know, he's going to end up where he wants to end up for the most part. You know, whatever brand of bike he wants to be on, he can pretty much do that. And you know, I think that Reedy rode great this year. I was proud of him. I was happy for him. Sad for him a couple times when he hit the ground the way they did, and everything else. But I mean, he's one of the toughest sons of bitches I've ever met in my life. And to do what he did, I mean, you know, I got to say that there's a lot of talk out there about, you know, was he really hurt? Was it really broken? And for the record, everyone that's listening, okay, his shoulder was broke. Period. there's no BS around it. I mean, his scapula was cracked. And I don't know how many people could have gone out and done what he'd done. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know how he did it, because it's not like he was on drugs or anything else. I mean, the dude just, I think the aborigine in him, you know what I mean? I think he's able to kind of fight through that pain more than regular people. I got to put it at that, but he's a bad dude. So anyone that had any questions on if he was really hurt, he really was. And everybody should applaud him for what he was able to do those last four races in those circumstances.
I think he could probably rescue a family of four from a burning building, and people would still maybe say, hey, you forgot the dog. I don't know, dude. The guy's gnarly. And, I mean, Wyndham's gnarly. They're all gnarly. But I've never seen a third on the all-time Supercross win list guy get bagged on so much.
I know. I mean, he is, by every measure that is possible, he's a bad, bad, bad dude. I mean, he's third on the list. He's, what, 10 races behind Ricky?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Who's the GOAT, literally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? No one's going to catch Jeremy ever, because Jeremy is Supercross, period. You know, but I mean, you're that high on the list, and what, just because he didn't win an outdoor championship or something, no one's going to give him respect? Just lame.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
it is lame.
He didn't win an outdoor championship because he chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he wanted his Supercross career to last longer, and it's frustrating to me because, and besides the fact that we represent him, you know, I don't personally, I never have done anything, you know, representing Chad wise, but he's my friend, and when you don't respect someone for their accomplishments, I don't care if you like the guy as a person or not, because everyone's got their own personality, and some people, you know, click with people and others don't. But from a racing standpoint, to not respect what that guy has done on the track is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Well said. Well said. I agree. Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I kept you a little longer than I said, but, you know.
No worries. You going to go, hey, you going to be going to Helen?
Yes, I will be there.
Any predictions?
Honestly, I like Ben Townley in the 450s. I think he's going to come out and pull a Sebastian Tortelli, just come out of nowhere, you know, kind of.
Very possible.
You know, just like Sebastian in 99, I like him in the 450s. And, I mean, TVDF, so what, you know, there's just one guy I think that he's, you know, looking good, so.
I think he, you know what, I think that, I don't know, but I heard that Dungy's been staying down at Stewart's house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how true that is.
He has been.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, and after watching his ride in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
I got to say that I think I'm going to give him some big credit for outdoors.
Yeah.
I mean, beating RV in a whole series is going to be crazy. It's going to be nearly impossible for anybody to do because the guy's just so gnarly. But I don't know, dude. I was utterly impressed with Ryan's ride at Vegas. I mean, I was blown away by it, actually.
It was really, really. It was probably one of the best rides all year, for real. So, I mean, just consistent.
For real, of anybody.
And you know that dirt. The harder you go, the more you make mistakes. So it takes a lot to to be right on that edge, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I tell you what, I mean, it's kind of one of those weird things, and it's like one of those deals, you know, God's got a purpose for everything, and you don't really understand it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think him getting beaten that championship might have been the very best thing that ever happened to that kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be one of those things that, like, really, really makes him a better rider. I think he's proved it since all that stuff went down with him and Jason. With, you know, I think Jason kind of got in his head a little bit, you know. But I tell you what, I mean, the way he's kind of come back and bounced back from it, I mean, it might be one of those things that that's a turning point in his career, and he's got a lot of championships in front of him, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I know he's got a good ethic, and he's got a good head on his shoulders, so, you know. What about Hepler on a 450? What do you think about that?
I don't know. You know what? I've not seen him ride. I got to guess that he's going to be pretty decent because Brock Hepler is a bad dude outdoors, period. So, I mean, God, look what he did at the end of 07 when he won all those motos in a row. That was pretty impressive.
Where's Josh Hill going to finish overall in the 450s?
Let's see where Stewart, you know what I mean? Let's see Stewart and Townley. I wish we were one race in. I could give a much better prediction. I just don't know where James is going to be and where Townley's going to be speed-wise coming off injuries. But I got to think that if Josh can continue on the path that he's on and doing everything that he's doing and staying fit and staying healthy, I know he's got the speed to do it. And I think that his fitness is pretty good now, working with Ryan and everything. That, you know, I think with a couple of little lucky swings here and there, I think Josh might be able to contend for a championship.
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't take my opinion at all because I'm clearly an idiot. I never would have bet any money that Josh Hill would have done anything this year, to be honest, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
And by anything, I mean top five or win a race, you know. So,
right.
Kid was awesome. And I'm sure you deserve some of that success for keeping his, you know, keeping his head right.
No, I just try to put him in good deals with good people, and you know he's got to do the work. But I try to give him as much support as I can, and all my guys for that matter, so they can just go out and concentrate on their job.
I thought that was cool how you called me on at the podium in Mini.
Yeah,
you're just so happy for him, you know. And then,
yeah, I was pumped for him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Too bad. The only thing could have been better is if you would have been there, huh?
Yeah, it would have been rad. I just wasn't able to get there, but I was listening, and when he won, I was like, dude, the only way I'm going to be able to talk to him is if I math this up.
Well, hey, thanks for doing this again. Thanks for all your work for the Road to Recovery as well. I know
and
your mom do great.
Yeah, we had a good deal at Vegas, and we raised $110,000, which is going to help out the injured riders fund, so.
Nice.
Everybody out there, join Road to Recovery. It only costs you like $30 a year, and it all goes into the pockets of the guys that get hurt. So.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks very much, and we'll see you at Glen Helen.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
See ya.
That was none other than incomparable Jimmy Button, former factory Yamaha rider, factory Suzuki rider, kind of, sort of, and all-around good guy turned super agent, Jerry Maguire type deal guy. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening again. I appreciate the all the emails and all the compliments I get from everybody. Don't forget, these are available on iTunes under Steve Mathis's Live and Uncensored Podcast for your downloadable pleasure. And thanks again. We'll see you next week.